I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I talk to on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. We're continuing with our mini-series that we started a few weeks ago with the episode titled Fire Your Business Coach. We're talking about how so many professionals today seem to be floundering, why they're looking for answers in all the wrong places. We offer some tips about what they should be doing instead. This week, we're looking at the myths behind business books, and we'll explore the wrong ways and the right ways to use published information to help you achieve your goals. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind. I really want to hear from you, our listeners. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter, or leave me a message on my personal phone number, 646-216-9306. If you want to talk, we can find time. If you like what you hear, please share this episode with your colleagues and friends, and it would mean a great deal to us if you would leave a review on iTunes to help others find our show. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Maisha Walker. Maisha is the president of Message Medium, a digital marketing agency that helps successful brands harness the power of digital to achieve aggressive growth. After working in direct marketing and finance, Maisha was a digital marketing pioneer in the mid-90s, and after 20 years, she's still innovating. Well, it's great to hear that you're still innovating, Maisha. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So I know you started programming when you were 9 years old, which is pretty remarkable. How did that impact what you have achieved as a business leader?
So that is a great question. You know, I never really thought of that as remarkable until one day I mentioned it to someone and they sort of looked at me like I had two heads. And I realized, gee, I guess there weren't a lot of other people back in the 80s, you know, programming at my age. So I think in
there probably still aren't a lot.
There probably still aren't. I mean, but that's changing now. There are so many initiatives and programs, and I think they're really moving us as a community in the right direction. So many initiatives and programs to teach kids the basic principles of programming and coding, and also to teach young adults. I recently heard that there's a program at the New York Public Library where you can learn how to program for free. A woman who's one of my clients has been taking classes there. So I think that is fantastic. And part of the reason is an answer to the question that you asked. I think that programming so I was a language major when I was in college. And a lot of times people would ask, well, how did you become involved in the digital world as a language major? That doesn't seem to make sense. But I think that there are a lot of similarities between those things. Programming, they actually do call them programming languages.
Mm-hmm. I see the connection.
You see the connection.
Yeah.
The process of learning and applying them is really the same in both instances. I was a French and Italian major, you know, the tedium of memorizing vocabulary words and, you know, all the exceptions to the grammatical rules. It's very similar to the kind of tedium that you deal with when you're learning a programming language and going through your work to make sure that you didn't misplace a comma or a semicolon. And I think you just have to have a certain, you have to have a certain appetite for that kind of tedium and be okay with it. And you have to find what you're doing or learning fascinating enough to make it worthwhile. So I think programming certainly helped me to understand just things that I was good at. It also gave me a sense of, for lack of a better word, a certain amount of power over my environment. I was really excited as a 9-year-old that I could create these amazing pieces of software, basically, that I could go back and then interact with later. And I don't know that there are that many experiences you can have as a 9-year-old that really give you that opportunity. So that really kind of woke me up to this sense that I can actually have an impact on my environment at a very young age.
Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I really enjoyed it. I was very passionate about it and harassed everyone in my family to let me write programs for them. It was a lot of fun.
So given that experience, what has that helped you achieve in your business life as an adult?
Well, I think very practically, there's the philosophical side of it, which I talked about, but very practically, I just don't think that there are very many people in the digital world these days who are programmers who are not actively programming. And so as someone who really deeply understands how programming works and can program, it really has given me a unique position as someone in the digital marketing world, because I deeply understand how all of the things that we're trying to do for a client, how all of those things are created and what is and is not possible. And it helps me to then be able to go out and hire programmers very effectively. So I'm able to build a really excellent team. It also helps me in terms of educating clients and their staff about how all of the pieces fit together and helping them feel really confident that I really know what I'm talking about, because I can approach the question or the challenge or the solution with a 360 degree understanding of exactly what we're going to be building or creating to put in the market for them.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I know that you have been featured as an online columnist with Inc. magazine, and you've done a lot with getting blogs that have a lot of traffic. And you've also done a lot of work with some major corporations that I suspect understanding the ins and outs and the details of programming and what your clients actually go through and what some of these companies go through in order to create the success that they've achieved, I suspect that that helps you a lot in interacting with them and communicating what communicating value to your audience.
Absolutely. And so I think the programming is the element that really sort of makes me unique. But the other two pieces that fit into that is that I, as you mentioned, I do have a background in finance. So I have a very strong, I worked at Morgan Stanley, and I did a lot of reporting for the board of directors and senior management. So I have a lot of understanding around just number crunching and understanding what kinds of data people are looking at to determine the health of a business like Morgan Stanley, which is a huge, as you know, a huge company.
Right.
Which gives
you a broad strategic perspective for
exactly.
Big companies, as well as knowing what it takes to implement the details on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly.
Which is a great combination.
It's an interesting combination. And then the third sort of leg of that is I also worked for a small time, but nonetheless, in direct marketing. So that just added a whole other, a whole other breadth of knowledge to the two pieces that I already had. And that's what eventually launched me back into the digital world, but on the marketing side and the business strategy side.
So, Maisha, that's actually a great combination of skills and probably gives you terrific perspective to observe what's going on in the world of business today, which I think has gotten very complex, in large part because of the digital tools we have available.
Yes, I agree. And I think a major challenge, and where I often help clients and even students, so when I go out and I do speaking engagements or I teach a class, a lot of what I'm able to do is clarify that, simplify it. I think it can become very overwhelming considering all of the many options that are available to us. And that's just in terms of digital marketing, which is only one piece of most businesses. And so a lot of what I try to do is, sort of calm people's nerves and say, your job is not necessarily to tackle all of these elements or all of these channels, because tackling all of them, A, just isn't feasible for most small businesses. And it also isn't necessarily the right strategy to use. For many businesses, people ask me a lot about, what should I be doing on Facebook? And for many businesses, the answer is nothing. So it definitely helps to have that strategic perspective also combined with the marketing perspective, because it lets me say, you know what, I can feel very confident and comfortable in advising you to completely ignore this particular channel, or, you know, to embark on this channel with the understanding that you're only going to invest the minimal amount of resources necessary to have a simple presence.
Yeah, I actually want to emphasize the point that you just made, Maisha. For our audience, listening to somebody who is a digital marketing pioneer say that the answer to the question, what should I be doing on Facebook with my business, may be nothing, is really profound.
You know, I'm always encouraged when I see people smile when I say that, because you see the sort of weight being lifted from their shoulders. Like, really? You're telling me it's okay? So, yes, I mean, there are many channels, and it is not possible for most businesses to tackle all of them. I give people the feeling that it's okay. You really do not have to feel like you've got to do it all. You really are going to get so much more return on your investment if you're very specific and very careful in choosing which channels you're going to initiate your campaigns on. And then there's always the opportunity to explore and experiment, but it's always much better if you're focused, which is true in many instances. It's not just true in digital marketing.
No, it is true in many instances. And in fact, I want to actually talk about one instance where this overwhelming amount of information that's available and overwhelming amount of choices that are available may impact how entrepreneurs respond to that information. And specifically, that is business books. I know you're an author. Yeah. And most of us who are entrepreneurs spend a lot of time reading and absorbing information, in particular business books. And one of the things that I see is that many professionals struggle in spite of, or maybe because of, the overwhelming amount of information. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about business books and some of the different ways that we might find and consume business books and what we do with that information.
Sure, I would love to talk about that.
So what do you see as some of the wrong ways to read business books?
Well, I think a lot of the way that I would answer that question has to do with what you do with the information that you've consumed. So I think it's always important to read with a reasonable amount of skepticism, and with, of course, an understanding of the perspective to the extent that you have this knowledge, but the perspective of the author, you know, where they're actually coming from and why they wrote the book that they're writing, I think is really important to understand, whether you're reading fiction or nonfiction. When it comes to business books, I think that is especially important to understand, because you can often find yourself in situations where, and this is true beyond books, like if you think about getting advice from a mentor or advice from coaches or advice from a consultant, you really have to understand what that person's skill set is and why they are in the position that they're in, giving you the knowledge that they're sharing. And I think with business books, often I find this in my experience, people in classes or clients will often come to us and say, you know, we would like to launch a campaign, a search engine optimization campaign. Can you do that for us? And of course, the answer is yes, because we're a one-stop shop. We can do everything and anything and everything under the digital sun. So what often ends up happening, though, is once we learn more about what it is that they're actually trying to accomplish, very often search engine optimization is the wrong channel for them to be using to do that, based on their particular business situation, based on how much time they have in order to get the results they're looking for, and based on their budget and their appetite for things like content creation. So I think from the perspective of absorbing knowledge from books and from other resources, you really have to understand why the book was written and recognize that the situation you're in may not be the exact situation that that book is applicable for.
I think that's really great advice, because every situation is unique. And while it's important to get information to help you solve problems, and it's important to get help to help you solve problems, the person who is offering the help or offering the information doesn't have your exact perspective, and may have very different reasons, as you just stated, may have very different reasons for providing the information or providing the advice.
Exactly. They also may have, because they have those particular reasons, they also may be providing you advice or information that is exactly contrary to what you should be doing. I mean, it's very difficult if you're writing a book. And as you mentioned, I have written a book. It's very difficult, even if you're writing that book for a really specific niche, it's very difficult to try to accommodate every scenario in a book. You have a limited amount of space and a limited amount of the reader's attention. So, you know, by its very nature, that book is going to be limited. And I just think it's important, as you go into the experience of reading something that is meant to help you with your business, that you are you walk in with open eyes and you're fully aware of the limitations that this piece of content represents. That doesn't mean it isn't going to be helpful, but it also means that you can't necessarily, you know, excerpt paragraphs or sentences or particular pieces of advice from the book and necessarily apply it directly to the situation that you're in. It always has to be, you know, it always has to go through the process that you would normally go through to make a decision about whether something is a smart strategy for your particular situation.
Maisha, what's a good example of written content that may have led to strategy that isn't so great?
Oh, wow. There is an abundance of it in my industry. There are always, I think one of the most popular examples that people will recognize is, you know, seeing ads. And I probably see a lot more of these when I am on Facebook simply because of the industry that I'm in. But I am currently bombarded with ads from coaches or consultants who are offering, you know, come and take my, you know, one day workshop, or, you know, read this one article and I will turn you into a Facebook marketing genius. I don't know. Have you seen any of these ads? I'm assuming that I probably see a lot more of them.
I probably get as many as you do. I probably get at least one an hour.
Exactly. So I find those ads really, really frustrating. As someone in the industry who understands the complexity involved in launching a successful Facebook campaign for a client, it is impossible to make someone a Facebook genius in an afternoon or through, you know, a couple of articles. And so it upsets me that people spend even a minute of their time looking at these things and reading them. But I know that everyone is overwhelmed with how to handle social media and other digital marketing. And so there is an excitement about seeing someone be very passionate. You know, I'm going to do this great thing for you and I'm going to make this so easy. There is a little bit of an excitement about the possibility that that may be true. So I think we've all seen, you know, sort of the get rich quick schemes, all sorts of consultants and people saying that they've got a really easy way for you to understand a really complex issue. I mean, they're always too good to be true. Or they work for a really, really small, very specific niche of person who's in a very specific situation. But in the marketing for these offers, they never tell you what that niche is or what that specific situation is that this is perfect for. Because the aim, of course, is to sell it to as many people as possible, whether it's going to work for them or not. So I think that's an example that most people can relate to and have seen in one way or another. And it's a perfect example of, you know, you can consume this information, but it doesn't mean it's actually going to work for you.
Right. So what's on the flip side, what's a great example of getting a book or some other kind of written information that does help me solve a problem?
Well, you know, I think the way that you use content and consume and actually apply the things that you've learned has a lot to do with, well, I will try to focus it mainly on the digital marketing space, although I do read a lot of business books about strategy, about, you know, how to run an agency. So I consume a reasonable amount of content about just how to be a good business owner, in addition to content around digital marketing. And I think how you consume it certainly, I'm sorry, how you apply what you consume certainly has to, you have to do it based on your particular degree of expertise in the subject matter. So I would say, especially in the digital marketing space, if this is something that you are unfamiliar with or inexperienced in, I would strongly encourage, you know, having people around you as resources who can help to decipher the contents and what you've learned and help you to apply it to your particular situation. So, you know, someone would email me and say, you know, I just read this great article about this, and they'll send me a link, and it's this great new tool or this cool new piece of software. And usually within, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, I can take a look at it and say, oh yeah, this looks like it could be great for you. Here's five things you want to look at in that software to decide whether or not it's really going to be applicable to your situation. Or I can look at it and say, this is a total waste of time for you. Don't spend another minute. If you're really trying to do X, Y, and Z, let me tell you to go down this path instead. So as someone who's been doing this for 20 years, it's just not that hard for me to do that. If you've only been doing it for 6 months or for a year, or you're really just getting started, it's very hard to know how to distinguish between what information is useful and what information isn't. So I would strongly encourage getting the advice of someone who is very experienced to help you, you know, separate the useful stuff from the noise.
Right. So having people in advisory roles, in addition to absorbing books or written information, is something that you're saying is probably badly needed.
Yes, I do think it's badly needed. I know that it was badly needed even for myself. I, over the last few years, have remedied that problem for myself by, you know, building an advisory board and having a really fantastic group of mentors who I now can call and ask for advice. You know, I read about this, or I saw this. What, you know, given the fact that I'm trying to do X, Y, and Z, what do you think about this way of solving the problem? And I find that when you can get the perspective of someone who's been through what you're going through now, that is just incredibly valuable. But the fact that you've already done some research about it and you've actually read a couple of books or read a bunch of articles and thought through the process makes you a much better investment for the mentor or the person who's giving you advice. Because as someone who's also been on the other side as a mentor, it's just nice to know that the person you're giving advice to has done a little bit of the groundwork already, or has formed some ideas or opinions about what they think might work that you can weigh in on. So yeah, I do think that having mentors and advisors you trust is really important.
And what are your thoughts about having a peer support community?
Well, I think peer support communities are fantastic. So I am a member, or actually have a leadership role in two of them myself. So I run an organization an alumni organization that focuses on the African-American community from all 8 of the Ivy League schools. I went to Princeton, so that was my one of the ways that I volunteer for Princeton. I've done a lot of volunteering for the university. So I run a group in that respect. I also am the vice president and president-elect for the National Association of Women Business Owners, the New York City chapter. So I really do believe that if you find groups that have the right combination of features for you, that it can be very powerful to have access to people that you might not otherwise have the opportunity to connect or spend time in depth with. I also belong to 2 other smaller, more intimate networking groups. And between all of those groups, you know, I've gotten great clients, great advice, friends. I've hired people on referral from those groups who have really helped me to grow my business. So I absolutely think that peer networking and peer mentoring is also very important.
And as someone who leads groups, what do you think are some of the keys to success of getting a group to work effectively and be supportive?
Oh, wow. What a great question. I'm not sure that I could boil that down into like 30 seconds, but I do think that really having a clear understanding of what your mission is and who is going to benefit the most from the group that you would like to create. I think trying to be all things to all people is inevitably a mistake, because you end up being very little to maybe a lot of people. But even if you have lots of people involved, you won't get the kind of loyalty that you're probably hoping for. So being really specific about what it is you're trying to do and who that's intended for. I also think groups need a lot of nurturing. It's very, very time consuming. And you have to be prepared to spend the time and energy to make those one-on-one connections and build relationships within the group and to feed the group whatever kinds of content it needs in order to grow and allow it to grow beyond you. So whether that's doing live events or online events or like we're doing now, creating podcasts and content, whether it's writing, you know, blogging, groups need something to help propel them forward. And I do think you as the group creator or leader have to find ways that you can reasonably either create that content yourself or build a team of passionate people around you who are excited about trying to accomplish the same thing, who will take over a lot of the legwork of making that happen. And I do think that latter piece of finding the right people to help you grow the group is hugely critical.
That's great. Thank you. So Maisha, focusing back on your own work and Message Medium, Where are you now with your business, and what do we have to look forward to in the near future from you?
Wow. Well, thank you so much for asking. So right now we are actually in the middle. So we ourselves are growing, which is always exciting. And we're in the middle of also producing a series of digital marketing events with the New York Public Library, the Sybil branch, if anyone is familiar with the Science Industry and Business Library, located on 34th and Madison. So starting in May and running through November, I personally will be doing a series of digital marketing workshops. And I will also be inviting panelists who are entrepreneurs, you know, not necessarily in the digital marketing space, but business owners and marketers who are in businesses who have had either wonderful or terrible experiences with digital marketing, who I'm going to be inviting to be on my panel to talk about those experiences in front of the audience. So the events are going to focus on individual, very specific digital topics from, you know, how to look at your analytics from your various channels onto things like specifically search engine optimization or search advertising or social advertising or email marketing. So I'm really excited to be partnering with the library to produce those events. And all of those dates will be going up on my website soon. And I think so that's kind of our big news right now is we're working on those events and pulling together our roster of panelists who we'll be inviting to share the stage with me.
That's great. I love the fact that you are going to have people who have had their own digital marketing experiences that they're going to share with the audience.
Yeah, you know, I've spoken at more than 500 events over the course of my career. And I've experimented with a lot of different formats, as you can imagine. That's a lot of events. Most of them, I would say maybe half of them were me solo, getting up and speaking and educating an audience about a particular topic. And maybe the other half or maybe a third were me on panels. I love the panel experience. It's just so much fun to be on a stage and sharing knowledge and having those other brains involved. But also educating independently, I do often find that I can get a lot more information across when it's just me on the stage. So this was a nice kind of blend of the two. So half of the event, I'll be spending teaching and educating and really getting into core topics around those topics. And the other half of the event, I'll be moderating the panel of entrepreneurs who'll be sharing their stories.
Sounds great. So, Maisha, how can listeners learn more about you, about this upcoming series of events, and the work that you do?
So they can visit my website. All of the events will be posted there. They can, of course, also visit the New York Public Library website, although their website is a lot bigger than mine. So it might be easier to find it if you go to my website, which is messagemedium.com. We'll be posting all of the events probably in the next 2 weeks. The dates will go live on our website.
Okay, that's great. So by the time this episode goes live, it'll probably be up.
There you go. Perfect timing.
Okay, great. Maisha, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest has been Maisha Walker, president of Message Medium. Thank you again, Maisha, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter, or leave me a message on my personal phone number, 646-216-9306. I really would like to hear from you. Come back and listen next week as we explore why the time is ripe for so many unhelpful coaches to take center stage. My guest, Rick Duras, who is one of the top pay-for-performance copywriters and is responsible for some of the biggest internet marketing campaigns and celebrities, comes on the show to share some little-known nuggets you won't want to miss. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.